Now on Tip FM, it's time for a special documentary, By Hook or By Crook. Vincent Murphy, a.k.a. Jasper, has travelled the world, but the one journey that he really wanted to make was a lot closer to home. Growing up and living in Feathered, County Tipperary, Vincent decided to travel to the only other Feathered in the world, Feathered in County Wexford, on the water. By hook or by crook.
My name is Vincent Murphy, but I'm also known as Jasper. I decided many years ago that I was going to travel between my hometown of Feathered in County Tipperary to the only other Feathered that I know of, which is Feathered in County Wexford. Many people have travelled between the two just because the other one exists. They've journeyed by car, on bicycles, in the air and on foot. But as far as I know, nobody has done it on the water, so I decided to do it that way. My plan was to take a variety of craft along the water, float with the current, and arrive in Feathered in County Wexford. Simple. Or so I thought. And when I got there, I had a very important question to ask, because Feathered in County Wexford is also known as Feathered-on-Sea, and I had been told that the reason for this name change was because of an incident in 1914. Before I left on my water voyage, I met with local historian Mary Hanrahan, and then I asked her if she knew anything about the incident.
I don't know if I've told you before, but I'm doing a trip. I'm going from Feathered to Feathered-on-Sea on the water.
On the water, yes. Yeah. I've been kind of following you on Facebook, Jasper.
Right.
Great interest.
Good.
Now, and before we start, now I must confess, I know very little about Feathered-on-Sea. I've been there once.
Right.
And that's it. That's my total knowledge of Feathered-on-Sea.
So you don't know anything about the name?
No, I mean, because I was thinking about this morning as I came in, because Feord, as we know here, means the place of the high wood. Now tell me.
Well, there's a story going around that I've heard over the last few decades. In Feathered in County Wexford, they know it, the majority of the people know it as Feathered. They don't call it Feathered-on-Sea. Now, there are some locals who do. And it's to distinguish that town from this town.
Yes, of course.
Now, there's a story going around that I'm trying to get to the bottom of it, basically, that Feathered-on-Sea changed their name after a maritime disaster back in 1914.
Okay.
Where 10 men lost their lives trying to rescue a boat. There was a lot of money gathered for the people. And the story goes, or one of the stories goes, that some of the money, or the initial money, ended up in Feathered, County Tipperary.
Okay.
And never went any further. So,
has it ever been found, Jasper?
Well, I have a historian on the case. I'm on the case myself. I'm researching it. And now, when I get to Feathered-on-Sea, I'm hoping to meet a Feathered historian. I'm hoping that it's not true, but I've heard on more than one occasion that ye fellas took the money and never gave it to us. So,
oh my goodness. So that would be a blot on the honour of Feathered.
I don't know.
A conspiracy of silence.
Well, it was very funny because when I heard it, I asked somebody, who took the money, or who do you think took the money? So the first answer I got was the clergy, that it was Catholic and Church of Ireland clergy.
Okay.
Which sounds a bit dubious. So I've researched a lot. I haven't found that. The next answer I got was that the town commissioners...
Were here until 1935, 36, yeah.
Right.
So the time frame...
Yeah, but I got a little bit nervous when I heard that one because I know my great-grandfather was one of the town commissioners. So this tragedy happened in 1914, so I shot straight across the road to the cemetery.
Right.
And found out, happily for me, but not so much for my great-grandfather, that he died in 1911. So he wasn't on the town council at the time.
So he's exonerated.
He's exonerated.
By the very fact that he wasn't there. And you do know, of course, that in the recently refurbished town hall, that there is a safe there. And they tried to, I mean, it hasn't been opened. It's town commissioner's safe.
Okay.
And during the restoration, apparently, they went looking at it. But they couldn't open it. Obviously, if you got a locksmith, you would be able to get it.
Right, okay.
Maybe the missing money's in there. Maybe there's nothing in there. Who knows? The mystery continues.
Oh, so the safe has never been opened?
No.
Oh, right. No. Well, I'm going to continue my investigation because I'm really, really hoping that the story isn't true.
Yes, I know. But, obviously, we don't want that,
no,
that aspersion cast on the people of Feathered.
No, but there's a chance that it is.
Yeah.
So
it's funny, isn't it? And it's common currency down there. Whereas I've been here a long time. I've never heard that spoken of here.
But first, I had one very big obstacle to my journey. The river where I was going to start had been hit by a summer drought. It was dry.
A brief hot spell is coming up now, with the status yellow high temperature warning in place nationwide, beginning tomorrow morning, continuing through Monday, when temperatures will be at their highest and lasting into Tuesday.
I'm on the banks of the Tlaxiali River, and there's not a lot of water in it, but if you can hear in the background, there's a lot of kids. A pool, nearly fell in. There's a pool near a pipe that goes across the river, which is actually where I'm going to be starting my spin. So what I'm doing right now is I'm climbing down into it. Okay, I'm in the water, and there appears to be enough of a stream along here to, I don't know, it'll be enough to take a kayak. So I have my waders on. I'm actually walking down along this section. Now, whether I'll get down here in a kayak or not, I don't know.
I soon realised that there wasn't enough water in the river to take a kayak, so I decided to take a refresher course in kayaking. I'd taken lessons over the years in freezing waters in Connemara, tropical jungle rivers in Queensland and Australia, and through gorges and cliff caves in New Zealand. So for now, as I had some time on my hands waiting for the waters to return, I went to meet Donnacha Mulcahy in Lismore, who takes people paddling on the River Blackwater, and asked him to give me a bit of a briefing.
So it's a 9-foot sit-and-top kayak, which we'll be using along any of our river tours. It's the safest one of the kayaks that you can take out in the water for beginners and novices. We're in Lismore here, just beyond Lismore Castle, just past Lismore Bridge. Our trip will take approximately 2 hours. Once you're getting into your kayak, it's important to go in with your bum first and then slide all the way back onto your seat. You need to keep your legs slightly bent in the footwells. The biggest thing that we need to worry about when we're kayaking on rivers is being able to stop and reverse, because we're going with the flow of the river. Hazards that we could come across along on the river today, fishermen is always one with their lines. Swans, this is their natural, or this is their habitat, so we want to keep well away from them, and they're just after laying, so they've got some cygnets around here as well. Trees, trunks coming from underneath the water, as other ones, and the flow of the river. So you'll find if it's most important to always paddle if you're coming into a strong current or something. The more you paddle, the more you're in charge of the boat. The less you paddle, the more the river's in charge of your boat. We'll head up to Lismore first, up to see the castle. We'll get some photos, and then we'll start making our way to Capoquin.
The kayaking down the river went really well. We hit upriver for the initial paddle, passing the majestic Lismore Castle sitting up on the cliff. We then turned and paddled for 2 hours to Capoquin, and something strange happened. I didn't fall in the water, as I usually do. And as I would be carrying my recording equipment on the feather drone, I needed to waterproof it. Some colleagues with lots of recording experience gave me some unusual but practical advice. I thought they were going to send me to a sound engineer, but they sent me to a pharmacist.
Hey, Jasper, how are you?
I'm good. Jack, I need to ask you something.
Sure.
In private.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I just need to get a packet of condoms.
Right, no problem. Just
and I need your advice.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so
I can help you with that. Yeah, sure. So, a couple of different types there. There's a thin feel one, or an extra safe one if you'd prefer it.
What's the difference, or do you know?
I'd say the extra safe probably is most likely going to be that little bit stronger. So that might be a safer bet, Jasper.
Right, okay. And which one is biggest?
Biggest?
Yes, biggest.
Okay. I'd say the extra safe seems to be bigger. That might be a better option.
Right. Will I show you what I'm putting it on? What you think?
Yeah, okay, no problem.
You see this little recorder that's in my hand?
Oh, cool, yeah, okay.
It's going over that as a waterproof measure. It's not what you thought it was.
I was getting worried there for a second. Okay, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll try the Durex Extra Safe and we'll see how we get on.
Great. I've heard a lot of excuses over the years, but this is a new one.
Right, thanks, Jack.
My next stop was Darren's Kayaks and Duras in West Cork. Here, I got all of the equipment that I needed for the voyage. The kayak that I purchased was a bit bigger than recommended by Donnacha in Lismore, as I had a bit of gear to carry. After that, I had to find a spot to train. The nearest river that still had water was the shore. It isn't the easiest river to access, so in the end I gave a friend in Kilsheelan, Nicola Everard, a call. And she not only gave me river access, but also a history of the former family home, Curtain Castle, which overlooks the river and which now belongs to artist Gottfried Helnwein, whose guests include Elvis Presley's family, shock rocker Marilyn Manson, and many others.
Good morning, Jasper. Beautiful sunny day here on the banks of the River Shore. Yes, Curtain Castle, what was known as Curtain Le Port, was owned by my great-uncle, who's Count Edmund de la Port, and he lived there up until he died in the 90s in England. Yeah.
Okay, and he was a count of what? What kind of count was he?
He was a papal count, papal name.
What's that?
So it's the Pope gave him the title.
Why?
Being a strong Catholic.
Okay.
Being a devout Catholic, he was, it's known as a papal title. So
okay.
Yeah, it was given by, ordered by the Pope.
With the river right beside you, did you ever use the river for swimming, fishing, boating?
Yes, indeed, we did. As children, we spent many a summer swimming our ponies that we kept on the farm. We'd come down here when the ground is very hard to ride, too hard to ride them on. We'd come down here to the bridge in Kilsheelan and we'd come down the slipway, which was no barrier back then, and we used to swim them backwards and forwards across the river, literally swim them where it was deep enough for the just their head above water, and we were being pulled along by them, and it was great fun, and it was really good exercise, really right. Good exercise for the ponies. And this summer we swam all underneath the bridge to the left there, as you can see, and it was beautiful, lovely clear fresh water to swim in.
And so, for the next few weeks, I took to the water on the river shore, paddling between Kilsheelan and Clonmel, in the company of fish jumping out of the water, herons, ducks, swans, and the occasional human on the blueway. And all the time, I looked at the skies, waiting for the rain to come, so that the River Clashawley would fill up, and I could start my river journey. Waiting. 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 And after weeks of waiting, looking at the empty river like a man possessed, I looked out the window at the blackening skies and smiled as tumbling water hit the glass. It was raining. I would soon be off on my journey. After a few days of rain, there was sufficient water in the river to start my epic voyage to Fetterdon-Sea. I got all my gear ready by the river, and unexpectedly, a few neighbours arrived, wondering what I was up to. One of my neighbours had a very interesting theory.
Okay, I'm on the bank of the river. I'm just about to launch the kayak for the first time on the Clashawley. And I've just bumped into two of my neighbours with their two dogs. And there's another neighbour with another dog coming. So this must be my send-off. So you were asking what I was doing. I'm going from Fetter to Fetterdon-Sea on the water. So I'm starting here. And I'm going to... Would that dog ever shut up? Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I'm going from here to Fetterdon-Sea on the water. So I'm going to start here.
And Fetterdon-Sea is over there, yes.
Over in Wexford.
Well, of course, the Vikings came up, didn't they?
Did they get to Fetters?
I think so. Harry Ponsonby told me, David.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't hear that before. So, well, I'm going to start over here and go down to Clashawley, down onto the Anner, and the Anner onto the shore.
Yeah.
And then down towards Carrickenshore, Waterford.
And do you think you're doing it in a day?
No. I'm only going to try phase one today, which is to get clear of Fettert.
To get?
Get past Fettert. This is the shallowest water.
Yeah, yeah.
Once I get down, like once I get on the shore, there's plenty of water.
Oh,
there's
yeah,
good
once
volume.
You fly down.
Yeah, well, it's just the first 2 or 3 miles are going to be the hardest.
Yeah.
Because there's just about enough water there for me to get through.
Even after all the rain?
Even after all the rain, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yes, Harry was adamant that they got up as far as here.
Right.
The Vikings. But they came, apparently, to Ireland first.
Okay.
And apparently they captured 3,000 Irish people and made them slaves.
Okay.
And sold them on the international market.
Well, that makes sense. They did take slaves.
Yes.
Yeah, and they think Irish slaves were brought right into the centre of Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, I can imagine. They were pretty fierce. Oh, well, best of luck. Then the Vikings came around. Turned us
up and turned us down.
After about 40 years of this being in my head, I'm at the starting point. So I'm going to put the kayak on the Tlaxcholi for the first time in a few minutes. And I'm down here at what is referred to in some articles as the weir, but it's actually known in Feddert as the sewerage pipe. So it was a pipe that took the early sewage out of town. So my plan is to get into the water here and go on a quick spin up to the other bridge here in town, which is beside the ballroom, I think it's Madeline's Bridge. And really my adventure starts there. So time to get the boat in the water. I won't be talking for a while because I have to wrap up my gear. I don't particularly want to lose it if I capsize. So I'll talk to you later. The start of the journey was going to be a little difficult. The water levels were low, but that worked to my advantage at times. I got under the first bridge with no problem, got through the weir and under the second bridge easily enough, but then trouble started. First, the water levels were low, so I had to pull the kayak for a few feet. But a few hundred yards later, I met my first major problem. There was a barrier across the river to keep farm animals in their field. This comprised of a circular animal feeder opened across the water. Beside that, there were two sheets of metal and a car bonnet hanging from a wire into the river. It took a while to manoeuvre through that. Then I met what was going to be one of my biggest problems on the first two rivers, the Tlaxcholi and the Anner. A large amount of trees and bushes were growing from the bank and hanging into and above the water. Briars and blackthorn were common, and in a few cases I had to jump from the kayak when the current was drawing me into them. Allied that with electric fences, barbed wire, fallen trees and actual gates across the water, and you're getting the picture. Instead of floating along with the current, which I did at times, and they were enjoyable times, I spent most of the trip devising the Tlaxcholi Get Fit program. Paddling, pulling, pushing, jumping, going under branches, going over gates, bailing out, climbing in, falling out, climbing in, gentle floating with the current, my arse. But then there were the rewarding parts. One of the most rewarding was passing by Kiltinan Castle. I'd often seen it from the roadside, but never from the river. It looks very like Lismore Castle from this side, sitting on top of a cliff overlooking the Tlaxcholi. And the history of the place is amazing. It is currently owned by composer and businessman Andrew Lloyd Webber and his wife Madeline, and is a successful stud farm. And a recent guest to the castle was a gentleman formerly known as Prince, but who is now known as King. That is, King Charles III of England. I've just bumped into a man from Kilusty, Damien Byrne, who did a similar type trip a few years ago.
It was a bit of a trek, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't easy. I presume you found that out too.
Yeah, well, I found the Tlaxcholi and the Anner to be horrific. I don't know, how did you find it when you went?
You have a romantic view in your head of paddling nice and easy from here to Kilsheelan, and the reality is far from it. Your nettles, thistles, knee-deep, blackthorn, you met them all.
Barbed wire,
we met them all.
Bonnets of cars. Yeah, the whole thing. But you were telling me you found something interesting on the trip.
Yeah, so I was paddling along. We were paddling along, and you know the way there's trees across the whole river, all the way down, you've got to get out portage around. But yeah. We came to one section anyway, and there was this boat bobbing up and down.
Where?
Somewhere just before Clamel. Yes. So there was this big boat, and it could take up to 10 to 12 people.
That big?
Yeah. Yeah, massive thing now, and, like, a pretty expensive boat.
Right.
So I carried on, got butchered all the way to Kilsheelan, and we came out, and we tried to persuade ourselves that we had a great time. But... But a couple of days later, anyway, I went home, got the Massey 135 trailer on the back, went down to the local farmer down the road and said, do you mind if I take a boat out of the river? Sure, the farmer hadn't a clue there was even a boat in the river. So I took the boat out, brought it home, and I rang the guards. And I reported a boat missing, and I have it. So if they came across anybody that owned the boat, come to me. So fast forward 3 months, and I was rubbing my hands with glee. I was Googling trailers on Dundeel engines. I was deep sea fishing.
Right, you had a free boat.
I had a free boat. But then, of course, sir, my father was inside in Feddert one day and met up with this guy called Eddie Murphy.
Right. I think I know what's going to happen here.
You think you know where this is going to go. Yeah. So anyway, let's just say that the boat wasn't belong to me.
Right.
It was belonged to, I don't know if I should even mention the name of the person who owns the boat. But
I don't think it matters.
It doesn't matter.
The owner wouldn't happen to have lived in a castle somewhere around there by any chance?
Yeah, you're getting warm. You're certainly okay. Getting warm.
Right, I have an idea where the boat is coming
from. And you know what? If I actually thought about it and retraced the river back up along, it probably makes perfect sense. But sure, of course, I was too busy thinking about my deep sea fishing off the coast of Clonay.
Yeah, fair enough.
It was a great experience. Got a bottle of whiskey. And I actually, would you believe, I still have his priest.
His what?
His priest. It's hanging up at home. That was in the boat. So a priest is a stick that with a piece of lead in the end of it that you finish off a fish with. Oh. And I had taken a few bits out of the boat while I was storing, and I forgot to give that back. So I'm going to use that as a souvenir. I have his priest hanging up on my wall.
In case you haven't figured it at this stage, the boat belonged to Andrew Lloyd Webber. The next stage when I resumed was the remaining stretch of the Tlaxiali River, which then joined with the Anner River just under the mountain of Slieve na Mon. This was even more difficult than the day before. The river was getting deeper and the water was moving faster. The obstacles were even more plentiful. And it was a combination of barbed wire, electric fences, and a lot more.
I just climbed out of the kayak on the shore in Kilsheelan. So I did what I consider phase two of my journey. I finished off the Tlaxiali, then that joined the Anner. I ran the length of the Anner I joined the shore in Clonmel, just below the Bulmers cider making factory. And then I followed the shore down the first Kilsheelan, where I actually left my trailer to pick up the kayak this morning. And I have to say, that was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. The Tlaxiali, the end of the Tlaxiali is a rough, rough river. There's an awful lot of debris, an awful lot of trees. I ended up in the water, climbing over trees, going under trees, and if I'm to be honest, it was stupid and sometimes dangerous. It was horrible. At one stage, I couldn't go any further. It just would have been too dangerous. So I hopped out and went for about 100 yards in the field, dragging the kayak behind me through cow shit.
And then it began to rain again, and rain, and rain. The river began to rise, and for the next few mornings, as I dropped my daughter to her school in Clonmel, I had to cross the bridge over the river shore. As I looked into the river each day, the water was rising and getting more powerful, sweeping the debris that had fallen in the past year from the riverbanks. It was way too dangerous to attempt to continue. I just had to be patient and wait my time. Eventually, the rain stopped, and after a few days, the river settled down. I put the kayak into the river in Kilsheelan once again and set out for the next stop, the town of Carrickinshore. This leg was short, but the river was getting bigger and the flow stronger. Ominously, the banks were littered with sunken wooden fishing boats. I learned later that the boats in the water were sometimes submerged deliberately. I was heading for the area that inspired the Clancy brothers, who took the ballads of Ireland to the world. And I had people to meet in Carrickinshore.
River, take me along in your sunshine. Sing me a song ever moving and winding and free. You're rolling, old river. You're changing, old river. Let's you and me, river, run down to the sea.
The fishermen who run the Carrickinshore River Rescue provide an invaluable service in the region. All too often, their job is to search for and retrieve the misfortunate people who have lost their lives in the water. This came as a timely warning to me to educate myself about the growing river, as I was now heading for Waterford and the Waterford estuary. I called to Jim Power in Carrick for advice.
And it's Tipperary's only tidal town. We have two tides a day. The river shore is navigable in all areas at the top of the tide. You have to be very careful and know the channel if you're doing it at the bottom of the tide. What else?
You were saying to me earlier that there's a spot that might get very choppy.
Oh, yes. The most dangerous spot on the river is from Granny Castle to Mount Congreve, or if you go from Carrick, it'll be Mount Congreve to Granny Castle. It's a long reach, they call it, and it's about a mile long. And when you have wind against tide, you can have a very nasty, sharp chop. You could have 4 or 5 foot waves only 4 or 5 feet away from one another. And as you smash into one and come out of it, you're just straight into the butt of the next one. So it can be fairly frightening. So it's very important to check the weather before you make that passage.
Sorry, no, that's my fault. Yeah. My gravedigger looking for me. I'm an undertaker.
Oh, so, yeah.
I didn't bring up for that reason.
So is there anything else you'd like to know? From Waterford to Cheek Pint is handy enough, but it really opens up after that, and you can have very rough weather.
Okay.
And rounding the hook, give it a very, very wide berth.
Well, I have no intention of rounding the hook in a kayak now. I'm going to go on a powerboat.
Oh, yeah.
In a sea rib.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be okay, so, yeah.
I then called to the Carrick River Rescue, based in the town of Carrick on Shore.
Mick Powell here in the Carrick on Shore River Rescue base. Carrick on Shore.
Carrick on Shore, Grant.
Paddy Powell here in the Carrick on Shore River Rescue base.
Mikey Powell here in the Carrick Rescue base.
Are you unrelated?
What's going on? Well, first couple.
Right, in 3 hours.
Four, okay. Another one is there.
Where are we now?
No, we're out in the on the main floor in the Carrick on Shore River Rescue. We have 6 aluminiums, right? You see them there, though. And we have 10 outboard motors for them. We have 2 ribs.
Ribs, yeah.
Therefore, further down or out to sea if we want them. Right. You know what I mean? So, and the people of Carrick on Shore bought all that. And this, what you have here, they bought that for us.
All right.
And that's the service we give them then for getting that for us. And we couldn't be more thankful. You know what I mean? Mm. So, you want to say anything, Paddy?
I'm not going to say the same what you said now.
No. You want to say it?
The same thing, I'll tell me the same thing now that you be saying.
Yeah. As you can see now, look, we're doing a bit of work here. Can you see it inside, like?
Yeah.
And we had to put in fire escapes.
Right.
Because...
Health and safety.
Health and safety. All the health and safety. And it's costing us a good few pounds now.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean? So, anybody out there wants to look after us, we won't mind.
I'll put that out there.
Will you?
I will.
Yeah. Tell them we're doing a lot of work there now.
Having taken in the advice that I received in Carrick on Shore, and with the weather closing in, I decided that this was the ideal point to change from the kayak and continue the water voyage in a sea rib. I met with Kenny Walsh on the slipway onto the river in Carrick on Shore. Kenny outlined the plan for the trip to Dunmore East.
I changed from the paddling myself now, and I'm hopping into a rib, and Kenny is just here pumping up the rib on the side of the river. So we're going to launch it down along the off the quay into the shore. It's a bit of an overcast day, but that's fine. It's not raining. There's still a big flow of water in the river. Hi, Kenny. How are you?
Not too bad.
Well, what's the plan?
So we'll just launch the boat here now shortly, and we'll be a little ahead of the tide.
Okay.
So we'll have high tide in about another hour, and we'll be slipping down the way with the rising tide.
With the rising tide. Okay, is that good or bad?
That's good. If we get stuck on anything, we'll be lifted.
Did you ever get stuck on anything?
Rarely. Do it a couple of times. I'll show you later.
All right, okay. Did you ever hit anything in the river?
Ah, yeah, you hit that bit of a bough or a tree or a branch.
Right. And
you said... No, it's usually fine. You just cut the engine and check your propeller and make sure everything's fine.
Okay, that's grand.
And off you go again, usually.
So we should make a bit of speed down the river.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done, so far, done as far as here now in a kayak.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was hairy enough in some of the rivers. So,
It should be a different sort of hairy. Actually, the worst part, I expect, would be out by Passage East, between Passage and Duncannon.
Right.
Where you get a bit of wind, and the tide is running out.
Right, okay.
So the wind will come, so you have wind against tide.
And which means
it can create a messy wave sort of environment.
Right, okay.
That might cause us to turn back or continue on, depending on the state of it.
Right, well, you know the water, yeah, so...
It can change within an hour. You just... It's right. Hard to predict it accurately.
Okay, well, you know what you're doing. We have a little bit of an obstacle down at the bottom of the ramp.
We have a half-sunk boat, but it's still floating a little, so we'll push it out of the way as we go down.
Do you think it'll float?
It is floating, yeah.
It is floating, okay, grand.
We travelled back under the new bridge in Carrick and up alongside the marina as far as the old bridge, then turned for the voyage to Dunmore East. The journey was slow at first, as the tide was still rising, and parts of the river were still a bit shallow. Most of the river is navigable at high tide, but there were still sandbanks to look out for around Fidown. Once clear of these, Kenny was able to open up the engine and bring up the speed. The rib brought us down past Fidown, then on Congreve Estate to Granny Castle, the piece of water that I had been warned about as potentially dangerous if I had wind against tide. We then passed under what was once one of the longest bridges in Ireland, the old Red Iron Railway Bridge, which once linked Cork and Kerry to the port of Rosslare. It was abandoned in 1995, and the centre section was taken out in 2003 to allow easier access for boats upriver. A short distance later, we passed under the distinctive modern River Shore Bridge, which was opened in 2009. Even though I've been travelling to Waterford City and County for over half a century, I've never experienced a journey like this one on the water. Along the way, tributaries joined the river flowing in from counties Tipperary, Waterford and Kilkenny. Ducks, swans, and even a solo kingfisher passed us as we travelled. As we slowed down coming into Waterford City, bailiffs from the fisheries department appeared to be inspecting another boat. They took a good look at us, but didn't seem too bothered. We proceeded at a slow pace through Waterford City, as obliged by maritime laws, and then opened the throttle as we passed by the port of Waterford, Faithlake Golf Course, and then we were at the meeting of the waters, where the combined rivers Nore and Barrow joined the shore. We were now rapidly approaching the sea. We passed Cheek Point, and then stopped into Passage East, where the river ferry crosses between Waterford and Wexford. Here, I met with a river pilot. We're on a pontoon here in Passage East, and we're beside the boat pilot. And I just bumped into the boat pilot here, and could you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, my name is Owen. I'm a pilot here for the Port of Waterford.
So what exactly do you do?
So a pilot's job, I'll get aboard a ship at Dunmore and guide it up the river, give advice to the captain where's the channel in the river, and provide local information and local advice, whether tides and depths of water, stuff like that.
So you go out at this boat here, and you actually climb onto the other boat, do you?
Yeah, it'll be either, if it's bad weather, we work with this boat because it'll be too rough down in Dunmore.
Right.
So I say we have a better boat in Dunmore, a brand new one. So it's, but as I said, if the weather gets too rough, we'll have to come up.
And how long are you doing this?
Almost 5 years now.
Right.
And before that, I worked at sea, different types of cargo vessels and work boats.
Where?
All over the world.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going out to meet the boats and bring them up the river now. Like, how long have you known this river?
Well, I grew up here in Passage East. I know the river a long time, but I said it part of the training. You're training for about a year and a half. You're following the other pilots. So I said you're getting a lot of advice from them. And
you said you have to get onto the boat to bring it in. How dangerous is that?
You have to pick your moments. You wait for the right moment. As I said, the ships, both of them are moving. As I said, it's it's part of the job. I said, if it gets too dangerous down there, I said, we can bring guide the ships up river a little bit, okay, where the swell is less. But I said, technology hasn't changed a whole lot in the terms of boarding. It's still a rope ladder over the side of a ship.
A rope ladder?
Rope ladder, yeah, wooden steps.
Oh, God.
I said, you're relying on who's secured the ladder up onto the ship.
Right. Have you ever been unlucky enough to have an accident?
No, I haven't. But I said, there are a couple of pilots die every year due to accidents.
Oh, really?
Boarding and disembarking ships. And it was only last month there was a big safety campaign. It's the International Pilots Association. They had a safety campaign. And we report a lot of any dangerous ladders.
Right.
But there's a lot of lack of knowledge on the ships about how they should be correctly rigged.
Right.
After our stop at Passage East, we went back on the river and Kenny explained what was happening from here to Dunmore East. On our left, we had the Hook Peninsula in County Wexford, and on our right, in County Waterford, we had Crook Village up on the hill. This is where the saying originated, we'll get there by hook or by crook. The attacking Cromwellian forces were attempting to try and take Waterford City, but they failed in that attempt. We were trying to get to Dunmore. It was decision time. We arrived at Dunmore East Harbour in a 5-foot swell. It didn't look like much when you looked at it from the shore, but it was just about the limit that the rib could endure. We were coming off the top of the waves and hitting the next ones. That's what I could have experienced on the shore around Mount Congreve. I was certainly glad that I was in a rib and not on a kayak after experiencing that.
Our trip today is after getting us from Carrickonshore down to Dunmore East, so I'm just walking along the quay wall here. And you can hear the sea is getting a bit rough there. This is our working port, and we just parked up there in between the fishing vessels. So our next trip will be from Dunmore East here to around the Hook, around Hook Head, and up as far as Feddart Harbour. In Feddart Harbour, then, I'm going to hop out of the rib and get back into a kayak and make my way up. There's a tidal stream up into Feddart Village. Going to make my way up there. So, literally, I've got two legs left to do.
As I left Dunmore, it was getting dark and the sea was coming up. We could do no more today, so I decided to go across to Hook Head, where I would soon be passing in a boat on my second last leg to Feddart-on-Sea.
I'm getting near the end of the journey now. We're as far as Dunmore East, and we just looked out at the sea to see what it was like, but God, it's rough. So our last piece will be from Dunmore East to Feddart Harbour, and I just said I'd take a drive over to the Hook to see what the sea was actually like. And if you listen in the background, it is unbelievable.
Once again, the weather went against us. At the start of my journey, we had no water in the river, so we couldn't go. Then a few weeks later, it rained too much and too hard, and we couldn't go in the river again. And now we were in Dunmore East, and the sea was rough, and it stayed rough for a number of weeks. But in January, things improved, and we got a nice flat day, which enabled us to go from Dunmore East across to Feddart.
Hi, there's Hook Lighthouse now around the corner.
What distance did we get?
Kenny says about 10 miles.
We did 10 around, yeah?
Yeah, 10 around, 10 back.
Okay. Right, here we go. We're just leaving Dunmore East now, and looking over, I can see Hook Head. It's a lovely, lovely clear day, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 planes in the sky. I'm sure as soon as we get clear of the harbour, Ken's got to go on the edge. There we go. And here we go. Just after arriving and pulled into Fettert Harbour. So that was lovely. It took us 45 minutes to come from Dunmore East. We went down around the Hook. The sea was pretty nice now. There wasn't much of a chop. I've got one piece of the journey left to do. I'm going to bring the kayak down, put it into the harbour here, or into the beach here beside the harbour. And if I go out the harbour mouth and go around to the left, there's a little tidal stream, which is actually up. I don't know, we might even try it today. And that'll bring me up into the village. And I'll go up as far as the bridge just outside the village. And that'll be my trip complete. Though, to be honest, if I don't get any further than this, I've made it from Fettert to Fettert on the water. So I'm quite happy with that.
A few weeks later, I brought my kayak down to Fettert Harbour for the final leg up the tidal river to Fettert Village.
I have just arrived at Fettert-on-Sea. So there's the town up there. And here's a little bridge down at the bottom of the town. And I am now going to... arrive with a bang. Here is my arrival at Fettert-on-Sea.
I was in Fettert-on-Sea. Having made it on the water to the village, I had to go back to the harbour to meet Liam Ryan, a local historian, to find out about the missing money. But before I went, I met a few locals and asked them if they knew why their Fettert was called Fettert-on-Sea.
Sorry, what's your name again?
Thomas Horlon.
Thomas, what do you call Fettert? Is it, do you call it Fettert or Fettert-on-Sea?
We call it Fettert-on-Sea.
Right.
A lot of people call it Fettert-on-Sea.
Right.
And some just call it Fettert.
Right, okay. And is there a reason it's called Fettert-on-Sea?
Well, I can't really get to the point of it, but back in 1916, the time of the disaster down here, the lifeboat disaster, a lot of the stuff went to Fettert in County Tipperary. A lot of money and funds and food and all for the families down here. So that's one reason they were trying to get back to Fettert-on-Sea. So a lot of stuff went astray at that time, back in 1916.
And is that true?
Well, I've been talking to a lot of people now, and it says it's true, and one of them was a historian, so...
Right, OK.
So I don't know after that. But even back before that, there used to be bishops on holidays here, and they called it Fettert-on-Sea.
Right.
Back in, I suppose, the 12th, 13th, 14th century, 15th century, along there.
Right, OK.
So a lot of people like to call it Fettert-on-Sea.
Just to distinguish between the two
places.
Yeah. And you think it was because of that there was money went missing, the type of the funding?
Well, that's what some of the stories said, that that stuff, the guy was two feathers, the thought was down in Tipperary, you know.
Yeah.
So it's very close with the sea there as well, I think.
No.
Well, it just went astray, and a good lot of funds and all, anyway, and that's what the locals says here, anyway, a lot of the older people.
Right, okay.
Some of them made it here, all right, but some of them went to Fettert.
And... did you hear that story?
No.
No?
I didn't hear it, no. This is the first time I've heard it.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Right.
But I can understand. I know exactly what he means by that, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it probably did happen, more than likely.
Okay. Well,
because even years ago, going back before the air codes and everything came in, sure, there was always stuff going amiss.
Going to the other side?
Yeah, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Whichever, you know what I mean? So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well,
yeah.
That's the question. I'm trying to get the answer to that question, and that's why I'm here.
Well, so, I'd say he's not far off the mark there now.
Things were not looking too good after that interview. I got back to the harbour, where Liam was waiting for me.
I'm here in Fettert Harbour in Wexford, and I'm chatting with Liam Ryan, and Liam's given me a bit of a history of, well, first, geography first, where I am, and a bit of a history of what happened.
Yeah, well, we're standing just at the little beach beside Fettert Dock. And just if we look east, we can just barely make out two small rocky islands, and those are called the Keerocks. And in 1914, a schooner called the Mexico was on its way to Liverpool with a cargo of mahogany. And they had trouble with the steering, and they missed some of the landmarks because of visibility, and they ended up in Ballyteague Bay. So they were actually almost on top of the Keerock Islands before they realised it. And when they tried to turn, they ended up striking the smallest Keerock Island and ran aground. They launched the, the feathered lifeboat called Helen Blake around 3:30 in the afternoon. It was quite rough. A south-southwesterly gale was blowing, and there was a crew of 13 men set out from the dock, or we think behind the dock in Feathered, and to effect the rescue of the men. But now when they got out there, it was quite rough, and there was a series of big waves struck the lifeboat and literally drove her in onto the rocks, and she was smashed up in a matter of minutes. And unfortunately, 9 of the crew of the Feathered lifeboat died that day. They succeeded in doing what they set out to do, and that was to rescue the crew of the Mexico. They managed to get a line from the boat to the island and managed to get the crew off safely. Unfortunately, the next day, one of the Mexico crew called Antonio Luis de Cuna died from exposure. It left 10 men dead. And I suppose, as a community, Feathered never really got over it.
Right.
And so strangely, I suppose, the local newspaper at the time, called the Wexford People, they published a full page of black and white photographs of, you know, the men who were lost, the men who survived, some of the families. And that kind of was really unusual at the time. This was 1914, you know, it was before the World War One. The People newspaper asked everybody to, you know, to send a shilling to these bereaved families in Feathered, and that became known as the People Shilling Fund. And it took on a global aspect, because the money started to come from all over the world, and it was literally addressed to, you know, the People Shilling Fund, you know, Wexford. And that money was...
Sorry, can I stop you there?
Yeah,
now?
You can stop me any time you like.
You just said the Shilling Fund Wexford.
Yeah.
Was it not the Shilling Fund Feathered?
No. It was the People, the Wexford People was the paper.
Right, okay.
So there was no New Ross Standard at that time. And as far as I know, there was no, you know, so it was the people,
right,
you know, the
okay.
Wexford People Shilling Fund was right. What it was called.
No, because that's leading me on to the question that I have to ask you.
Yeah.
Now, there's a kind of a story going around that Feathered-on-Sea was renamed at that stage, that locals would know it as Feathered. But it became Feathered-on-Sea because of that fund. And there was a story, basically... The purpose of my voyages, I'm trying to get an answer. They say that some of the money that was intended for Feathered-on-Sea ended up in Feathered in County Tipperary. Did you ever hear anything about that?
I did. I wrote a book on this tragedy back in 2010, and it was something that I never, ever found any reference to anywhere. And if you went back to the old newspapers, like, what the Wexford People did was publish the names of everyone who contributed to the shilling fund. And, you know, obviously people gave more than a shilling. Some people gave a fiver, some people gave £10 or what have you. But nowhere did I ever see any reference to Feathered on, you know, the money heading to Feathered in Tipperary. But there is a story that exists in Feathered, and that's there was an astronomer. He was the local rector called William Archdall Ellison. And he was an amateur astronomer, and he had his own observation little towers set up in the garden of the Feathered Rectory, and he was forever building telescopes and sending off for eyepieces and reflectors and mirrors and all that kind of thing. And he was the man who got frustrated with his stuff ending up in Feathered in Tipperary. So he added on sea. To Feathered.
Also,
so that's where the suffix came from. But now, William Archdall Ellison was here. He was director here in 1914. But he had got in there first with his on sea.
Okay.
And that's where the on sea was added. It had nothing to do with the Feathered lifeboat disaster, because the money never did end up in Tipperary.
Right. Well, I'm just going to suggest we might get out of here, or yeah. Liam Jasper on sea. So, but the waves are coming in.
And so, After months of travelling on the water to Fetterton-on-Sea, I finally got my answer. The people of Fetterton Tipperary did not get or keep the money. The answer had more to do with astronomy.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, and let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars.
And now, with the answer to my question, I was a happy man. But with my main question answered, sitting on the bridge beside the ducks, I had one more to ask. How the hell was I going to get home?
Tip FM.